I'm going to try to go slow, so maybe make it comprehensible. How to make the quantum adiabatic algorithm fail. And this is work by me, Jeffrey Goldstein, Sam Gutman, and my student, Daniel Nagai. Now, why are we doing this? Why we, well, I think the reason is because, well, so a lot of people have been trying to show, recently there have been some examples of people showing that under certain circumstances, the adiabatic algorithm has to fail. And we would like to call those poor choices. And so what we're doing is we're expanding the domain of failure. And so we're saying, OK, you think you know how to make the algorithm fail. We're really going to show you how to make it fail. I sometimes call this encircling the bad guy and then, so anyway, the idea here is how to show, make poor choices lead to failure. Now, what I mean by failure is this. We're typically thinking about searching for, in a satisfiability problem, for n things. So what we mean failure is if the time to run the algorithm over the square root of n goes to 0, the algorithm will fail. So that means that you can't get any kind of, in terms of bits, remember, n is the, here n is the number of things you're searching over. So if n is the Hilbert space, capital N is the Hilbert space size, it's 2 to the little n, where little n is the number of bits. So we're getting failure if the time, for example, grows only polynomially in the number of bits. So that's what we need.
Okay.
And please stop me.
No,
did I say it wrong? I need the coffee.
So you say the algorithm fails if when t over square root of n goes to 0, it fails.
Yes. Oh, so I said it backwards. Thanks. Okay, so you're alert. Okay, so if, that's right, this will be failure. So if the time isn't big enough, it will fail. Thanks.
And why do you just choose square root of n?
Well, because you'll see that that comes out of the way. That's going to come out. That's going to come out.
You mean improvement over growth?
Yeah, no improvement over growth. Well, you'll see that it's not so special. Right. So the setup basically is this. We have what we call the problem Hamiltonian, which we write in the z basis. Remember, z is a string of bits. Z, it may be a string of bits or not, but in this case, z goes from 0 to capital N minus 1. We have a cost function, h of z. We want to find the ground state of the problem Hamiltonian, which corresponds to finding the minimum of the cost function. And we're going to attempt to do it by quantum adiabatic evolution. So we start with a beginning Hamiltonian at t equals 0, whose ground state we know. And we're going to we're going to morph the Hamiltonian from the beginning Hamiltonian to the problem Hamiltonian. The runtime is capital T. Capital T also corresponds to the rate of change of the Hamiltonian, so it's the slowness parameter also. And the idea here is that at psi of capital T, we want to be in the ground state of this. That's the idea. The adiabatic, which has been gone over already.
Should that be the projection onto the z direction at the top line? It does look like a vector, not an operator.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh yes, that's okay. Right. Sorry.
Thank you.
Thank you. Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you. Good. So, first of all, I'd like to talk about the Hamiltonian version of the Grover problem, just to warm up. Remember what the Grover problem is. The Grover problem is you have a function f of z, and it's defined on the integers from 0 to capital N minus 1. And you have a promise that this function outputs a 1 on all of the inputs, except there's a special place called the winner, I write W for the winner, where it outputs a minus 1. And your task is to find W. Now, you have to have sort of a setting to understand in what sense this is difficult. And the setting in which this is difficult is if you have no knowledge of the function f, other than you can give an input to it and it produces an output. And that's called the oracle setting, where you query the function and it returns an output. Now, in real life, you can't really, the oracle is, in the most idealized sense, is somebody you call who lives on the top of the mountain and then gives you an answer. But we can't really use that when we, that's a little bit too abstract for all purposes. So I would like to think of the oracle setting as the following. You have code for the function f on a computer, and you're allowed to call the function f with your computer, but you're not allowed to read the code. So that's what keeps you from knowing anything about the function. See, the function may have an if statement in it that says if z equals 99, output minus 1. So if you read the code, you would know the answer without having to do the search. So I'm going to deny you the ability to read the code. And the point is that in that setting, since any classical computation can be written as quantum computation, I imagine that I have code for the function on the computer. I then quantum compile it. I take that classical code. I now have a quantum computer. I use that code. I have a quantum compiler that turns it into quantum code. And then in that model, the Grover problem can be solved in time n to the 1/2. And that's the miraculous speed up of the Grover problem.
Yeah, but the way I think of it, which I think is equivalent, but I don't see why you can't read the code, is that you have code to check the solution to some hard problem. You imagine that, you know, the vector z are encoding all possible factors or all possible solutions to the traveling salesman problem, and your code is allowed to, I guess, is allowed to check whether or not that's a solution. Because checking is easy to do on a classical computer, and then you could do it with a series of unitary gates, and if it checks, it outputs a 1, or if it outputs a minus 1, if it doesn't check, it outputs a 1.
But if I know the suppose I know that it's the traveling salesman problem and you've specified the city distances, then I can't prove that you can't solve the problem quickly unless I can prove that P doesn't equal MP.
No, I'm not saying you can solve the problem quickly. I'm saying that if you think of each of the Z's as encoding a possible, I mean, you can program a classical computer, okay, that if you give it a set of Z's specifying 2 factors, say, to check, you know, multiply them together and see whether or not they give you the number you want. Mm-hmm. I think the variant of traveling salesman is whether or not it's below a certain threshold.
Yes.
Okay. So now you're allowed, you have that code for a classical computer, but for a classical computer, you would have to check it on all of those different Z inputs. Okay. You translate that code to a sequence of unitary gates on a quantum computer. It does exactly the same thing, but now it's allowed to do it in parallel on a superposition of those Zs.
That's right. Well, I agree, so you do it faster. But
you have the program, that's what the oracle essentially does. You know, it does those unitary gates to check, but you don't have to do it one at a time.
I don't think that's what the meaning of the oracle is. I think the point of the oracle is to deny you information.
In the case of the search problem,
can I just finish my sentence? And then, maybe I'm wrong, but I thought that the point of the oracle was to give you a setting in which you could sort of argue that, deny you information about the problem, so it's possible to prove that you cannot solve the problem faster than a certain amount. You see, that's the point, in other words, without the oracle, I can't really prove that classically this takes n calls. The only way I can do it is by saying I know nothing about this function other than what it outputs.
Well,
that's the point of the oracle. It allows you to prove that things are not possible.
I think the simplest way, in my mind, is to say you have the telephone book problem, and Bob has forgotten the name of Alice. and he only knows the number anymore. So to check the, if you want to find a telephone number for a given name, you need log capital N steps, operations, because the telephone book is ordered.
No,
it's log N.
Right.
And if but if you check a number, you need N.
Well, I understand that, but
this is, of course, you understand it. But I think this is in the way,
I agree with you that, well, maybe this is too fine. Maybe it's not really important. But the idea of the Grover algorithm, obviously, is that you're doing an unstructured search, and you don't know anything. And classically, it takes time then, and quantum mechanics takes the root of that. That's the point, OK? But I was just trying to say that if you want to prove that classically, it takes time then, if you wish to do this, I'm not, maybe we don't, but if you wish to prove that classically, it takes time then, the only way I know how, but there are more experts on this in the room, the only way I know how is to deny you any information about the function. Because once I tell you that the function has any kind of property, then it becomes very difficult for me to prove that you can't use that information to speed up the calculation. So I have to deny you any information about the function. Otherwise, I have to prove that you can't do something in a setting where you have information. Is that fair, Scott?
That's extremely fair. That's so fair that I wouldn't even know how to state it explicitly, but you asked.
So
okay.
Can I, from a technical, theoretical, computer science point of view, what you say is correct, but it's actually hard because you don't want to just find the phone number. You want to find a phone number linked to a name. So in fact, you're not doing. I think it's very hard to imagine that. So you're probably right that my idea, but it's easier for me to imagine a set of unitary gates that checks whether or not certain factors can be done. Now, in that case, or whether or not, for the traveling salesman, you're below a certain threshold. Now, you can't prove, because it's not proved that, you couldn't do that in polynomial, you couldn't solve the problem in polynomial time. But I think conceptually to say what kind of mysterious thing is this oracle, it's doing something like a checking, which you can imagine being a program or a sequence of unitary gates. And if you're willing to accept there's no way to do the search to find the solution classically, then I think computers, from the standpoint of theoretical computer science, people might not be happy, but it's conceptually the same thing.
Well,
please continue.
It's conceptually the same thing.
So anyway, in this oracle setting, everybody has their own sense of what an oracle is. Classically takes n calls, and quantum mechanically takes n to the 1/2. And the other important thing here is that this classically taking, quantum mechanically taking n to the 1/2 is best possible. You cannot improve that. Well,
in what sense?
Well, in what sense is the sense is that there is no, in the oracle setting, which means I, in the sense that I said, where I have, I deny you the right to read the code, which you have now compiled on your computer and turned into quantum code.
Now it's important that you have your set.
Thank you. Okay. So in that sense, you can prove that there is no sequence of unitary transformations alternating with calls to the oracle, which will be able to find the winner if the number of oracle calls is less than n to the 1/2. That was proved by BBBB. But now I'm going to prove it again for you in the continuous time setting. So that's the sense in which I mean it. BBBB, I don't know who they are. They proved. Okay, fine. So those guys, they proved what I just said. Was there a question on that?
No. I think it was very important to say in what setting this is.
In the oracle setting. That's why I have been making a fuss about the oracles, right?
Not only in the oracle setting, but in that particular oracle. It's conceivable you could have an oracle do something different.
Okay, but it's in the oracle setting which I have been. But I gave an oracle setting in which I think it makes sense, and in which I think, you know, because you could actually turn the function into something that runs on a computer. So that's why I said it that way. Okay? So, but I'm not going to, and that proof says that you cannot do better. And so that's the Grover result, and that's possible. Now, I would like to put this into a Hamiltonian setting. This is something I did a long time ago with Sam Gutman. But I want to imagine a Hamiltonian version of this problem. And the Hamiltonian version of this problem is going to be this. We have a problem Hamiltonian, which I call HW, which is a projector, or one minus a projector, really, onto a single, essentially a single marked item. In other words, this state W is now the quantum representation of that winner spot in the previous list. And we have this Hamiltonian, which is essentially, the way this Hamiltonian looks is it's diagonal in the Z basis, and it's just 1, 1, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, 1, 1. And we want to find out where the 0 is. And the way we want to find out where the 0 is, we want the quantum computer to evolve into the state, which is so that we can then figure out where this spot is. Okay? And well, so the idea in this setting, let me just finish my one thought, is that what we're going to say is you have this Hamiltonian given to you in some way. You don't know what the winner is. And you're allowed to add to it any time-dependent driver Hamiltonian. So this is beyond the adiabatic setting now. I'm going to allow you to do anything. I'm going to add to this Hamiltonian any winner-independent driver Hamiltonian that you choose to design. And then what you're going to do is you're going to start at some W-independent state that doesn't know about W, because you don't know what W is. And you're going to evolve according to the Schrodinger equation. And you wish at time capital T to find yourself in the winner state. Okay? And we prove that this takes time at least for an event over 2e. And I'm going to show you the proof. So now, what's your question?
Your HD can contain minus HW, so you're...
No, 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 because HD cannot know about W, right? I mean, you see, again, you're given HW, that's you have to design, you're trying to design the driver Hamiltonian without knowledge of W, right? You can't contain it. I mean, it might for one W, but...
So, my question is, could you give us more concrete examples where you have this Hamiltonian without knowing W?
No. This is an abstraction.
I understand that, but I don't quite understand how you can get this Hamiltonian without knowing the W. So,
well, I mean, for example, let me give you an example. Like when we talked about quantum adiabatic algorithms for finding solutions to NP-complete problems. I'm not saying we could, but we could actually do it, I mean, quickly. But there, you can design a Hamiltonian whose ground state is W, even though you don't know what W is. Right? If you have a satisfiability problem. Okay, sure. Let's take it. I mean, it's again, well, sure. I mean, in terms of, in this case, there won't be all ones there, sure, but I can give you an example. I mean, suppose I have a satisfiability problem, and I have a bit string, and the satisfiability problem is like 3-sat, okay? And so the 3-sat is written, so and there are 2 to the n possible inputs here. Now, the way we're going to describe the satisfiability problem is say that there are a set of clauses, M clauses, to use the language of yesterday's talk, M clauses, Hmm? Is that okay?
Not for me, because I'm totally illiterate.
You missed Tuesday when there was a talk on this.
But there was also a talk on it yesterday by the Greek guy.
Okay. No, but not how you encoded it in the final.
But let me just say what I'm saying. I'm trying to answer this question. I believe I can answer this question. So in a satisfiability problem, like the reset, is that okay, or I can't use that language?
Continue, go ahead.
Yeah, then what you have are M clauses on which act on bit strings. And the clauses represent constraints on subsets of the bits, okay? So each clause says that in 3-stack, for example, says that if you look at the 3 bits in the clause, that they can be, of the 8 settings of the 3 bits, some are true and some are false. Okay? So you can define a little cost function for that. So for any clause C, I can define a cost function HC of Z, which is 1 if the clause is not satisfied, and 0 if it is satisfied. Okay? Now, my total cost function, then H, is the sum on C of HC of Z. So it's a sum of m terms, okay?
Each clause is something that you can check on your computer.
Each clause is something you can check, right? Okay. Now, each clause is something you can check on the computer when I give you an input, okay? Now, this function, h of z, is a function from a domain of size 2 to the n into the integers. Right? Now,
and you want the one which minimizes this.
Right. But it's very easy to construct the function, but I still don't know where the minimum is.
Yes. Okay.
Okay? And then this is the quantum version of that. Okay, so it's a one way. Okay. Okay, so now we want the coffee break. We've been told that we've got the pointy finger that it's time for coffee. So we're going to take a quick coffee break, and then I'm going to prove this. Okay.